Stay tuned for The Turning Point with Mike Fader. Well, Pope Francis is coming to New York City. He'll be here in a couple of days, and the city is already reeling from his visit. And it's not just his visit. It's the annual General Assembly of the United Nations meeting, where all the leaders of the world come to address the and harangue or whatever the United Nations. The President of the United States will show up. This is... the worst day, this is the worst week, actually, for traffic in New York City, and maybe the worst week in history. It goes past New Year's Eve. It's like it goes past the president's arrival, past the arrival of everybody from the United Nations. It's absolutely astounding. And the city is probably going to be, it's already, it took me about twice as long to get down here, and I don't even live in this area of the city, twice as long to get down here from a different part of Manhattan. When I say city, I mean Manhattan. I don't mean I assume New York City is Manhattan, but I'm talking about the traffic here in Manhattan. It took me twice as long to get down here today as it usually does. I had to use a different bus, and even that's jammed up. The subways will be even crazier than they used to be. And... all because we're expecting an arrival, not just from the president and from the members of the United Nations, but also from the Pope, the you know, the head of the Catholic Church, a man who seems to be trying to change the entire, apparently seems to be trying to change the entire Catholic Church and Catholicism itself, and seems to be trying to go back to basics. He's a man who's interested in... in peace. He's extremely anti-capitalist. So, of course, where is he coming? It makes sense, doesn't it? Man who's extremely anti-capitalist and is for equality for all people, including economic equality, which he sees as one of the inequality he sees as one of the bases of the trouble and the poverty in the world. He is coming to the Sin City. He is coming to the capital of capitalism. He is coming to, and you know, in addition, one of the capitals of liberalism. But he's coming to the capital, the home of capitalism in New York City. And it's driving everybody here crazy. If you live in Manhattan, if you live in city at all, it makes everybody completely nuts. So whatever his great message, whatever the leaders of the United Nations are doing, whatever the president has to say, is of less interest to a lot of people. Well, it may be interesting to people, but it just pisses the whole city off. I mean, the security, there are streets closed, everything is diverted. There'll probably be a million extra people coming into the city, mostly pilgrims, I guess you could call them. Catholics, maybe non-Catholics, people who want to get some kind of connection or be near this man who seems to be one of the great influential, peaceful, charismatic souls on the face of the earth right now. Whatever his drawbacks may be. The city should probably, and they already have, encourage people not to come into Manhattan if they don't have to. Well, people have to work, you know. Sorry about my voice. Let me get some water. Allergy season now on top of everything else. So here he is. And the security, of course, there'll be 10,000 cops, you know, put on extra security, called in to do extra shifts. There'll be... Secret Service guards, guards for all the national leaders. There'll be special guards for him. There'll probably be 20, 30,000 different security personnel in the city. And they need to be here, too, because there are certain... I mean, when a man like this, when a man of peace comes in a world like this, to a city like this, he's putting himself in jeopardy. Let me read you a couple of the article. A couple of the there was a long article in the paper the other day about this Pope and about his visits, and about his desire to change the church. I'm just going to. It was a very long article, so I'll just read you like small portions or smallish portions of it, give you an idea about who he is and what he's coming to do. It says here, Vatican City. Days after the election of Pope Francis, word reached the Vatican press office that the new pontiff was unexpectedly celebrating morning mass. Other popes had presided over morning services too, but as the world and the Vatican press office would soon realize, Francis did things his own way. This mass was offered in the small chapel of the Vatican guest house, where Francis had chosen to live, not, as in years past, at the ornate Apostolic Palace. His audience was not the cardinals of the Roman Curia, but gardeners, janitors, and Vatican office workers. And Francis was not merely presiding as Pope John Paul II, as had John Paul II. He was preaching without notes as if he were a simple parish priest, if one with a big message. He says, The church asks us all to change certain things, Francis said during one of his morning homilies, as he invoked a gospel reading from St. Paul. She asks us to let go of decadent structures. They are useless. Yeah, absolutely. I can testify to that. Well, I'm trying to let go. The symbolism of the morning services, which Francis now holds four times a week, is clear. A humbler papacy, where the Pope is foremost a pastor to the flock, not a king. But a humbler papacy hardly means humbler papal ambitions. Francis is not just trying to change the Roman Catholic Church. He seems determined to change the world. Popes are expected to challenge society, but Francis, 78, who was age 78, who lands in Cuba on Saturday and prepares to arrive in Washington on Tuesday for his first visit to the United States, has achieved a unique global stature in a short time. His humble persona has made him immensely popular, a smiling figure plunging into crowds at St. Peter's Square. He speaks in deeply personal terms about people discarded by the global economy, whether refugees drowned at sea or women forced into prostitution. His blistering critiques of environmental destruction have seized the world's attention. And in addition, also, I'm adding, his blistering critiques of capitalism, not just even the excesses of capitalism, but capitalism itself. He is also an inscrutable tactician whose push to change the church has stirred anxiety and hope and some skepticism. Many conservatives project their fears onto him. Many liberals think he is some kind of kindred spirit. Others argue that Francis is less concerned about left or right than he is about reversing the church's declining popularity in Latin America and beyond, where a great many of the world's Catholics live. Francis is a great showman, said Ruben Rufino Drie, a longtime critic of Francis and an emeritus professor of the sociology of religion at the University of Buenos Aires. He added, his repositioning of the church is paternalistic. It is not a strategy for empowering its followers. This is by no means a revolution. So that's what some people believe. Francis has not fully revealed his hand, but already his spiritual mission to place the poor at the center of the church has enabled him to thrust it to the center of the global debate on issues such as climate change, migration, and the post-2008 rethinking of capitalist economics. So, you know, who can say what this guy is up to? Who knows what he's up to? Is he really insisting on reversing the role of the poor? At the same time, it just so happens that the poor, and several hundred million of them, live in various countries, and a couple of hundred million of them live in countries in South America and Central America, where they're Catholics. So to come out in favor of reversing income imbalance, to come out in favor of rescuing the poor from their misery, which is a great mission, and after all, he's not the first Christian who was here for the poor. There was somebody, I think I recall from a long time ago, too. And it's hard to tell with a guy like this. He's shrewd. He's humble, and he's got simple messages, but he's a shrewd guy all at the same time. And a few more things. These are snippets of these articles. Through gestures and words, Francis has repeatedly challenged elites inside the church and out. He has attacked an insular Catholic hierarchy for focusing too much on dogma and spiritual worldliness and too little on ordinary people. He has attacked prevailing global economic orthodoxy, the belief that markets and the pursuit of wealth will lift all boats, as a false ideology inadequate for fully addressing the needs of the poor. In the United States, Francis's biting critiques of the excesses of capitalism, the excesses, is ringing true to many people, have caused discomfort even among his sympathizers and outright disdain from critics who have called him a Marxist or a communist. And at the same time, all of his life, this guy has actually demonstrated that he has great humility. So he may be a great tactical figure. He may be a great political leader and shrewd, like many other great political leaders have been in time of crisis and when people needed them in the world. But for most of his life, he avoided the limelight, rarely speaking to the media, and spent little time in the affluent parts of the capital, especially when he was the cardinal of, I think it was Buenos Aires. His predecessor as archbishop in Argentina had courted Argentina's political elites, which led to a later corruption scandal. But Archbishop Bergoglio, which is what Francis was named before he was made pope, erected a divide. His focus was on Argentina's poor. He created a cadre of priests who worked and lived in the slums of Buenos Aires and made regular visits leading religious processions or saying mass. Before every Easter, he visited prison inmates or AIDS patients or the elderly. And there is more to this, too, but he has attacked, I'm just going to go over this real quick, he has attacked the global economic system as unjust at its roots. And he has said that rich countries most responsible for climate change and urge them, obligated to help them, the poor deal with their crises. In a visit to Bolivia, Francis compared the excesses, listen to this, the excesses of capitalism to the dung of the devil and apologized for the church's role in Spanish colonialism in Latin America, warning of the new colonialism of materialism, inequality, and exploitation. And this is what he said. Once capital becomes an idol and guides people's decisions, once greed for money presides over the entire socioeconomic system, it ruins society. It condemns and enslaves women and men. It destroys human fraternity. It sets people against one another, and as we can clearly see, it even puts at risk our common home, that is the planet. Rush Limbaugh, of course, says he's a Marxist. Some people think he's a communist. And many affluent Catholic donors withdrew pledges or expressed discomfort, pledges to the church. And finally, but he is, according to this article, but he is hardly a left-winger, either at least in the political context of the United States. Even as some of his social and economic views have inspired the American left, he still strongly opposes abortion and believes marriage should be between a man and a woman. People project their aspirations onto him, and that is not a new thing about great charismatic leaders in the world, right? The senior Vatican official, an unquoted senior Vatican official said, or an anonymous Vatican official said, people project their aspirations onto him. Some people might have hopes raised that are not going to be fully realized. For some people, there might be an expectation that there might be a lot of institutional change on things like gay marriage or ordination of women, and the man's implying that there wouldn't be. So now, as I mentioned, Manhattan is crazy locked down, and a lot of it has to do with, of course, security. These people, the elites of the world are coming. And that's one of the great ironies, of course, is that Francis is one of the elites of the world. And he will have a tremendous security detail. Probably if you add it up between cops and his own people and the Secret Service and the national government and everybody else, he might have a couple of thousand people shadowing him wherever he goes. And that includes, so that includes maybe a couple of hundred vehicles, and streets will be locked down and closed. So at the same time, he's coming here to the city to talk to the United Nations, and he's going to have he's going to give a speech at Madison Square Garden, and he's going to apparently he's going to address a lot of people in Central Park. Who knows? Maybe a million people wherever they locate him in Central Park in Manhattan, and. But at the same time, the irony is, of course, and he's flying here to talk also about, the depredations of pollution and environmental destruction. And he'll be flying here in a gigantic jet like Air Force One. I don't know what it's called. Papal One or something like that. And it'll be spewing, stuff all over the place. So there's always these contradictions. There's these ironies that, in a way, Francis has to use, he is chosen to use the instruments and the trappings of power to fight the instruments and the trappings of power, to fight people who are in the power elite. And as I say, the city will be completely, it already is, it's completely wrecked, and it's just the very beginning of it. He isn't even here till Thursday. And one of the reasons that there's so much security is, of course, all these people get security all the time because people are worried about assassination. And they should be worried about assassination. I mean, it could be anybody with a personal grudge. It could be people who just hate peace. It could be people who hate peace. I mean, look what happened to Gandhi. Look what happened to Martin Luther King. Look what happened to Jesus, for Christ's sake. Look what happened to Jesus. Anybody who says that he wants to, A, change, who's very aggressive and says that he wants to change a rigid political or cultural or economic system that's been in place and has kept people in power, certain people, for hundreds of years, maybe for 1,000 years or more. Anybody who wants to do that, who wants to help the poor, and who wants to, reset the rigidity of a gigantic patched in, connected structural organization, which is hooked up right to the top of power. Anybody who wants to do that is in a lot of danger. And as history has showed us, they are in danger of being assassinated. And once again, I'll mention somebody like Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and the original, if you believe it, the Son of God, Jesus, the Prince of Peace, was killed for trying to shake up, you know, it's simplistic, but for trying to shake up the prevailing orthodoxy of religion and the power elite that controlled the religion in those days. It's a vast simplification, but that's one of the things he was doing. I mean, he was going up against the Romans, at least. And they didn't want anybody, you know, changing the power structure or the way things were structured, because that was, you know, was their world. And Gandhi, Martin Luther King, who basically, if he was Catholic, would be a saint by now, tried to change the shape of the world, tried to change the shape of the world, and did change. Both of these people, in some ways, made gigantic, or helped make gigantic political changes, which have freed whole countries, which have gotten whole races and groups of people to have rights that they never had before, although it's still a long battle in this country, and have had an influence by their preaching of peace and their preaching against war and against money and against power, which is, you know, you can't even measure it. It has affected people all over the world, and it still affects people, and it's one of the great influences of the world. But such people are in a lot of danger, because if you're going to preach peace, you're going to put a lot of people out of business. Anybody who preaches peace is in trouble. Anybody who preaches peace is in danger of violence. You're going to put people out of business. You're going to put groups of people who are in power, powerful branches of religion. I mean, there are whole branches of major religions that are dedicated to war, to carrying on a great war. Onward, Christian soldiers, jihad, you know, various branches of other religions which are intolerant, which use violence all over the world to destroy anybody who wants to bring people together and who wants to bring peace to the world. Governments, corporations, if you're going to bring a message of peace to people, and you're going to denounce capitalism in specific terms. I mean, Gandhi and Martin Luther King perhaps somewhat, he denounced the war in Vietnam, and Gandhi to some degree, but he was mostly for nationalism and for raising up the poor in India against the British elites. And a lot of people paid a high price for it. And Jesus was against reforming or at least breaking the connection, bringing God back to the people to try to, and, you know, in his case, it's complicated because he said that he was, or he implied that he was, the Son of God. But he wanted people who were poor to get some hope, to endure. He was bringing them hope and comfort. If it was through him as the Son of God, well, that's a different story. But he was here for the poor. And so when Francis says he's here for the poor, a lot of people in his own organization, a lot of powerful people, especially in the Catholic Church, who have gotten very rich from the Catholic Church and who are connected to the elites in other countries, when they say that, they're shocked. They're outraged and they're shocked that he's doing this. And which I find infinitely amusing, because the leaders of the Catholic Church and the entire Catholic Church and the Vatican, all of that, including all of Christianity, is based on a man, depending on what you believe, who was a prophet or a revolutionary in a local way in Palestine at the time, in Judea, and who, to some other people, was the Son of God, but he was a man of peace. He came here to bring peace and to uplift the poor. And so the whole religion is based on, it was perverted and
corrupted later on, as all things become perverted and corrupted by the power of the natural power of humanity, people of humanity to strive for power. But, you know, it's all based on that. So the fact that this guy, most of what he's saying is just a modern version of exactly what the original religion is based on, the man and the message the original religion is based on. It's if it wasn't sad and awful, it would be funny. Because all of the, you know, all these cardinals and all these archbishops and all the rich and the Catholics who are denouncing him, conservatives, Catholics who are denouncing him, and conservative Christians too, their whole off-stated, you know, Christianity and Catholicism and hiding behind the robes and all the trappings of the church and of Christianity, all of it, they wouldn't have any of it if it wasn't based originally on this humble man of peace. So the fact that he's imitating this is silly. You know, so, you know, and being criticized for it is ridiculous. So governments and corporations are other groups. So powerful branches of religion, special interest groups, international corporations, global corporations, massive corporations, and governments too, all over the world, including our own, maybe even especially our own, which depend on the fact that there are the poor. History is a story of the poor and of the elite and the great masses who serve them. From the beginning of recorded history, there have always been people who are in charge and pass this down, the divine right of kings. You know, they pass this stuff down. More and more you can see in this country, for instance, as countries and societies and cultures get older, more and more of this is entrenched. So all the people, or most of the people, I should say, maybe we have some exceptions, who run and who own America and run and own the government, are people who, whether they say they're religious or not, the candidates or the people who own and run the government. These people, you know, depend on the fact. The British Empire, other empires, the Roman Empire, the British Empire, the American Empire, even the American middle class structure, even most of us listening in some small ways or maybe even larger ways, depend on the fact that people all over the world are suffering extreme poverty. I mean, after all, we get so many of our products and our energy and necessary things for our lifestyle here, most of which is probably unnecessary or luxurious, though I use some of it myself. Most of these people depend on the great masses of people, billions of people in the world working in Pakistani clothing factories or Chinese sneaker factories or Vietnamese sneaker factories or working like slave labor in Chinese factories producing millions of cheap and otherwise not so cheap items at almost like slave labor or virtually no pay at all for richer countries and for empires and for the elites of other places. So when you come to the United States of America and you're preaching the evils of capitalism, or you have preached the evils of capitalism, maybe he won't do it when he's right here in New York or Washington. When you preach peace, you are going against the interests of the established founding and prevailing interests of most of the power elite in the whole world, corporate money and religion. So there better be some protection for this man. And I really pray, to use a certain word, that nothing happens to him. Because if the man is here for the poor, then God bless him. He needs to be here for the poor. And as I say, it doesn't really make any difference that the people are criticizing him. He is just doing what the founder of the original religion did.
Let's drink to the hard-working people, and let's drink the lowly of birth. Raise your glass to the good and the evil. Let's drink to the salt of the earth. Say a prayer for the common foot soldier.
Yeah, the salt of the earth. And like I say, I don't really know. Who's to say how what's going on in a man's mind like this? I mean, he sometimes he is so he has been spent most of his life, especially in positions of power, and especially even now when he's the Pope, acting humble, being humble. I mean, he is criticized, and he has actually chastised certain archbishops in this country. I think one or two cardinals in various places, and maybe in this country too, for living in palaces, for living in giant mansions. I mean, you know, the church is being practically sued into bankruptcy in various countries, mostly European countries, and in this country, various dioceses have had to practically, I think one or two of them have declared bankruptcy. Was it St. Louis or a couple of other places? Because of the hundreds and hundreds of years, and probably far more than that, but the hundreds of years and the last 50, 60, 80, 100 years of revealed predatory behavior by priests against children. The whole thing has always been, you know, to me, completely unnatural and absurd and ridiculous that priests can't marry. And who does the priesthood then inevitably draw a lot of? You know, obviously, you'd have to say maybe the most priests, and I don't know how many, about nuns, but most priests feel like they have a calling, or they may originally feel like they have a calling, and some of them do tremendous good for their congregations. But a lot of priests, a lot more than there should ever have been, and these are protected all the way to the top for obvious reasons, in some cases all the way to the level of cardinal, and perhaps even more in some cases, to maybe one or two of the popes, who knows. You know, this child molestation, this rape and child molestation is one of the great scandals of the world. And a lot of people in this country, organizations and people who have been, whose lives have been ruined or almost ruined and by the sexual behavior and decadence of priests and probably some nuns, are looking for, and he's already said that, you know, things have to be fixed, that things can't go on like this forever, that the church can't keep having people like this. And people like this, but they feel like he hasn't gone, he hasn't been strong enough to do this. He hasn't been strong enough to actually go up against the whole church, and he hasn't been as aggressive as he should be. So people are looking for what he has to say more and more about this. But he certainly is starting to criticize all the an organization that's going bankrupt, but at the same time, they have lived on the riches of the poor and the miserable and the credulity of the poor and the miserable for 1,000 years. And is he attempting to change all that? Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. You have to hope he is. A lot of people hope he is. And in fact, a lot of people hope he's a lot of things. When you get a great charismatic individual like this, especially in a position like this of tremendous influence and power, and there are close to, what is it, 1 billion Catholics in the world, maybe 1.5 billion Catholics in the world. I don't know how Catholics feel. I'm not Catholic, and I don't know how Catholics feel. I have friends who are Catholics and ex-Catholics. I have a little more water here. This is not holy water. This is regular water. I don't really know how Catholics feel. And I grew up with some friends who are Catholics, and later on in my life, I became close friends with a lot of people who are Catholic. And they had a very bad attitude about the Catholic Church. I mean, because of the way they were abused and in some cases molested, and because of the narrow-minded prejudice and all the, think of George Carlin. And all the emphasis on sin and evil and guilt. I mean, a lot of people who were feeling, thinking people, and we're talking about millions of people in this country and other parts of the world, grew sick of Catholicism. They've grown to hate it. People will say, I'm an ex-Catholic. I'm not a Catholic. And it doesn't mean they're not a Christian anymore, that they don't believe necessarily, but who knows. Although it affected a lot of them that way, too. I know some people who are extremely spiritual people who were brought up Catholic and find it difficult to believe in anything anymore that partakes of the spiritual or the eternal, right? So I don't know how Catholics will feel. I mean, I had one friend who was like that. He was naturally, is, I should say, I haven't seen him in a while. He was like that and is a very spiritual person and has his own form of prayer and rituals that he does and would probably be the kind of kid when he was brought up, if he hadn't been beaten up a couple of times by priests and smacked around by nuns with the usual rulers and everything else, if he hadn't experienced all this capital punishment and all this craziness and guilt and sin about sex, especially of the Catholic Church, he might still have been a religious Christian, and he probably still is, but in his own way. He does not attend the organized Catholic Church, and so do a lot of people not. Church attendance has fallen off tremendously in the last several decades in this country, especially in the last couple of decades. I don't know about other countries, but certainly in this country, and I think in other places too. Apparently, in South and Central America too. It's fallen off because of two things. One is because the church has so routinely, over hundreds, even over 1,000 years, up until even recently, aligned itself with the elites. The princes of the church have been the same princes that ran the country in a decadent, horrible, cruel way. The elites of the world, the rich of the world, the powerful of the world, who prey on the masses of poor people and everybody else too, have often been hooked up with the leaders of the Catholic Church. So that's one reason they don't believe in it anymore. And then their individual experience with all the guilt and the sin and the corporal punishment. And I remember he was very, when he was younger, he was very skeptical about this. We were sitting once in an Irish bar on the Upper West Side in Manhattan. There was a lot of, it's an old Irish neighborhood. Not anymore, it's gentrified. Well, we were sitting in an Irish bar once, one of the leftover Irish bars, and people are drinking, and mostly they're, Irish guys, construction workers, guys from World War II. This is a ways back. And they're, knocking down the booze, and there's a TV on, naturally, like there's a TV everywhere, and TV in the bar. And the Pope was visiting some European country, I forget what it was, and it was when he was shot. Remember, I forget which Pope it was who was shot. There was an assassination attempt. And there was something about somebody said, "Pope shot." My friend says very loudly, my friend, the ex-Catholic, says very loudly, "Who did he shoot?" Who did he shoot? Everybody turned around to look at us. And, man, we had to get out of there. I said, "It's time to leave, man. Time to leave." So I don't know what the Catholics, the people who are here, the Catholics, what they're going to feel about it. I think a lot of people who were driven away from the church, who don't believe in Catholicism, share this with other people who are Christians and other people who, it doesn't matter what religion they are or if they're no religion. A lot of people, sometimes when things are really, really bad, like they are in the world now, and it seems like there's so much imbalance, so much poverty with a small group of crazy, violent elites, maybe it's always been that way, it seems worse than it ever was. It certainly is in our country. People, the childlike part of people, which never goes away, yearns for a great man to come along. After all, Martin Luther King was a great man and a leader when he was needed. So was Gandhi when he was needed. They were there to lead people. I don't even like to compare the two, but in some ways, as the tactical side, the charisma and the fighting the rich, so was FDR. When there were hard times for people, when things were really bad in certain ways, for certain groups in certain times, and Jesus too, people look in their desperation. They put aside their rationality and their intellect and their calm appraisal of what's real and what's not real. And they say, "Screw it. I'm looking for a great man or a great woman to come along." It's not Hillary Clinton. It's not Donald Trump. People see, people look at these Republican debates and they say, "Oh my God, look at these people. These are the people, these petty little intellectual and moral midgets, these people, and no matter how bright they might be, these people who are opportunists, who cater to the rich, who actually even work for the rich. A guy like Scott Walker essentially is an employee of the Koch brothers. And Trump, who knows who he is? But when, and then you look over the Democrats, you see Hillary Clinton, and even though he seems like a nice guy, Joe Biden, all these people are suffering. I mean, even the middle, there hardly is a middle class anymore. I mean, even if you make what used to be called middle class money, you can hardly afford to live on that anymore, pay your rent, buy your food, and pay your electric bill. These are just necessities, let alone whatever luxuries you might have. Forget about that. It's almost impossible to live. And you've got millions and tens of millions of people in this country who are living in poverty. What is it, 50 million people? There's 320 million people in the country. There's something like 50, 60, 70 million people more who are living in poverty. People who are working at jobs, a lot of them, that don't pay enough to even live above the poverty line. And yet they are working for, and the government spends all our money on wars, on spying on us. The people who are really rich are buying it. So there are people who have no place to live. There are tens of thousands of homeless people in this country. And there are some people who have 8 houses. And they run for office. John McCain. What's his name? Romney. He had, 3, 4, 5 houses? Hillary Clinton. How rich are she and her husband? How many houses do they have? How many apartments? I mean, this is who we get. It's way gone. Obama's rich. It's way gone past his time. He appoints people who are rich and who are powerful. And so people at times of misery, and the black people know about this from Martin Luther King and from their entire life of misery in this country, the Indians from a couple of 100 years of British colonialism, before that and along with that, the Rajas, people living in misery, dying of diseases, being homeless, starving. And there are people all over the world like that now, too. And people sometimes turn to religion. You don't have to be stupid or ignorant. It's part of human nature to turn to some god to save you. some God to save you. You start praying. You start looking maybe for somebody on earth, some great man or woman to come along and say, I am here for you. I will lead you out of this. And in some cases, you're very lucky. They actually are here for you, and they will try to lead you out of it, and they will do as effective a job as they can, and they will pay for it with their own lives. So people are looking, I think, to Francis for this. But part of all of this, too, is paternalism. A lot of what I'm talking about here, when I say great men or great women, I'm talking mostly about great men. It's men that are running the world mostly right now. It's men that have run the world mostly into the ground, and you know, who are fighting, all who are leading and fighting and making all these wars, who are the people who are running all these hedge funds and all these corporations, who are running most of the government. It's paternalism. And Francis is the head of the longest organized paternalistic organization and the most powerful paternalistic organization, longest running, I should say, too, on the face of the planet, the Catholic Church, the Vatican, the Roman Catholic Church. You know, he's the head daddy. He's the Holy Father. You know, there aren't even allowed to be women priests. Priests cannot marry. Women, I guess, maybe are too evil or whatever it is. Priests cannot marry. There are no women priests, and he's not likely to ever change that policy for women to be ordained as priests. You know, so it's not going to happen. He's the head of the Roman Catholic Church, and it's paternalism. His own personal stance may be complicated, but of course he's against abortion. And, you know, he's against same-sex marriage. And as I say, against women priests. And, you know, he's a paternalistic. He's paternalistic. And it was Freud, actually, who pointed out, not that he needed to point this out, but he did point out once, that the great masses of humanity, and that includes people who are, as I say, not necessarily ignorant or uneducated, need sometimes, desperately need, and sometimes it's just their helplessness and their powerlessness that we all have. You look to some great person to lead you out of it. Is it Bernie Sanders? I don't know. Is it Bernie Sanders? I don't know. Sometimes you look for somebody who almost is connected in a way with some higher spiritual power, like Gandhi sort of was, like Martin Luther King was, like Pope Francis maybe, like Jesus said he was or may have been. But still think of this paternalism, you know? It's an irony, it's a contradiction. How can a great, great person who has tremendous charisma lead a group of people out of misery? One of the problems is as soon as that person dies or is, God forbid, assassinated, then everything falls apart because they have not set up enough of a structure of equality, an ongoing structure of equality. They've used their charisma and their paternalistic power to create a kind of cult. In some cases, it's a good group or a good cult that's for a good purpose, for a noble purpose or cause, like Gandhi or Martin Luther King. But once they disappear, who is to replace them? And you see often that groups will fall apart and start to bicker, and movements fall apart after the great people die. It happened at a radio station I worked at once. There was a man who was very, very powerful and was changing the whole face of the radio station, not necessarily for the better. And he was, very, very strong personality, charismatic. And he suddenly died. Nobody expected him to. And after that, there was a lot of squabbling, and the station lost its way and stayed lost, more or less. Anyhow, so Pope Francis, he is, and think once more, I suppose one extra thing to add is think of the whole idea of the Catholic Church and of religion in general, and you know, when you think of Christianity, a pastor has his flock. So basically, a lot of the thing is based on the fact that there's an acknowledgement, an understanding that people are sheep, and the pastor is the shepherd. And what is it? The shepherd's crook that is used? Is that a shepherd's crook that is used? by, you know, the leaders of the church, you know, the cardinals, and maybe the Pope has one of those too, I think. And as I say, in the end, he'll be here. He'll be at Central Park. He'll be at Madison Square Garden. He will bring his message, and he will keep bringing his message. And, you know, hopefully nothing will happen to him, and I'm assuming it won't. I have a feeling he's going to be around for a while, bringing his message of helping the poor and helping the planet to everybody. And I hope he does, and I hope people follow what he says, and I hope his influence is great. But he is still the head of the Catholic Church, and there's a long way to go for the Catholic Church. But whatever his message is, and whatever, you know, whatever the faults he still has, and whatever the faults the Catholic Church has, you still have to hope that this man, since nobody else really, certainly on the level he is, nobody else has the influence and the power and the and it looks like the drive and the will to do what he's doing. So you have to hope for the best.
except for the Pope may be in your